He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Happy birthday, Mick Fleetwood. He was my neighbor in Malibu on Ramirez Canyon Drive. He lived down at the bottom where the creek came by. I could tell you a lot of stories about what happened down there.
I got time.
And the other side was Barbara Streisand and John Peters lived together, and I lived just up the hill. Quite the hood. Stalkers would come by looking for Barbara.
Gay stalkers or...
Not so much.
Isn't she sort of a gay icon, yeah, like if you're a guy?
Maybe in those days,
it wasn't so clear.
Not so clear. Lots to do today. I'm going to be talking about, I'll be talking to cops about cops regarding, obviously, Mayor de Blasio's abrupt reversal regarding the size of the NYPD. Question I have is, will it stop crazy people like the one who almost chopped off that Korean woman's arm in Bryant Park? So do you think there are more homeless street people now than there were, say, a year or two ago?
It's hard to tell. I mean, it always seems there's certain times of year you see a lot of them. Of course, when it's cold indoors, Penn Station, Port Authority, wherever it may be where there's some place warm to be. But hard to tell.
I see more.
You do?
Now. I do see more. And here's a guy, the guy who hacked off or tried to hack off this Korean woman, this tourist's arm. He had 24 priors. 24 prior arrests. So what's this guy walking around free in Midtown with a machete looking for someone to chop up? 24 priors. I mean, for goodness sake. You can be against grim institutions for the mentally ill, but this is a criminal. This is a person who is criminally insane. 24 priors. Well known to cops. And the machete, look, where do you get the money to buy this machete? It's a formidable weapon. It's a foot and a half long, looks sharpened like a razor. How do you even get a machete like that?
I don't even know where you'd buy
it. Where do you go? You go to a hardware store? You want a machete? What are you, get a sugarcane plantation? When it comes to crime stories outside the city, there's no doubt, obviously, that the massacre of the nine churchgoers in Charleston, South Carolina, I think will come to be regarded as a different kind of turning point. We're all people of goodwill, black and white. I mean, I am still stunned by the comradely response to what happened. Everybody kind of in it together, black, white, joining in their revulsion over the racist slaughter. And maybe even something that was unthinkable just a month ago, the removal of that Confederate battle flag from the grounds of the state capitol, maybe that'll happen. I want to talk more about that, how Walmart now and Amazon and Sears and all the big retailers have stopped selling Confederate paraphernalia. So, you know, I hate to put it in these terms, but maybe those nine will be a martyr to a new era of people being sensitive. But I want to really start, I have to mention this breaking news from last night. This is kind of a tale of two cities. I want to contrast with Charleston and what I talked about, that comedy, that brotherhood of folks responding as one to the horrible slaughter of the nine in the church, to what happened in Baltimore, because there's big news out of Baltimore now. The leaking of the autopsy of Freddie Gray, whose arrest on April 12th, as you remember, ignited rioting that destroyed a huge hunk of West Baltimore there, a section of town that really had never recovered from race riots back in 1978. So anyway, remember, six cops, three of them black, were arrested. The driver of the police van, a black man, got the most serious charge, depraved heart murder. Depraved heart murder. You don't have to prove that the person intended for someone to die, but you have to prove that the suspect knowingly did something that was likely to kill and that he showed extreme indifference to possible harm. I go to Nome. I put an apple on his head. I take a bow and arrow. I have no skill. And I go to shoot the apple off his head and I hit him right between the eyes. That's depraved heart murder. I didn't intend to kill him, but it was so likely, it was so extreme in my indifference to his life, his safety, that it could be a murder too charge. Reading the autopsy, it's clear that Freddie Gray died as a result of not being strapped in the van, and he suffered the single high energy injury to his neck and spine, hit him in the head when the van suddenly decelerated. So they failed to fasten his seatbelt. We get that. They failed to fasten his seatbelt. But when they put Freddie Gray in the van, they put him on his belly. His ankles and hands were shackled. He was on his belly. The state medical examiner says that that injury could not have been sustained if he had stayed on his belly. So they have to surmise that he got to his feet. He somehow worked his way to his feet. And then when the van had an abrupt change of direction or went too fast, too slow, you know, giving a rough ride, that's kind of a tradition in urban settings, not this one, but in many I know. But remember, you also have testimony from another inmate in the van that Freddie Gray was banging and kicking and screaming. So let me tell you this. There is no way on earth that you can get a conviction for depraved heart murder under these circumstances. Could the driver know that Freddie Gray was going to stand up and start acting out? No. You can get, and remember, Freddie Gray is stoned on opiates. Marijuana too, but he's stoned on opiates. That means he's taking crack or something like that. He's yelling, he's banging so hard, he's causing the van to rock around. And you're going to get depraved heart murder conviction out of that? There's no way. There's no way I could defend this guy. I'm not the greatest lawyer on earth, but I would be guilty of malpractice if I could not get an acquittal on a depraved heart murder rap under these circumstances. A guy who has a history, this victim of hurting himself. A black driver. So where's the race crime now? So there's no federal involvement, no civil rights. Where's the race? Half the cops are black, including the supervisor, the sergeant. There's no way you get a depraved heart murder conviction out of these facts. And shame on the prosecutor for bringing the charge, raising expectations, because there is going to be gross disappointment again in Baltimore. In Baltimore, where there have been 34 murders in the last 30 days, no protests. 93 murders in the last 3 months in a city with a population that we're talking about here of about 250,000 people. 93 murders out of that group. The focus, because I think South Carolina will be forced to do the right thing. I think Lindsey Graham's absolutely right. That state will never be able to sustain the disapproval of the nation if it does not take down that flag. I think that something big and important is going to happen. The president's going to speak at the memorial service for Reverend Pinckney on Friday. It's going to be huge, but it will be a healing moment. Contrast that to Baltimore now. These cops will be acquitted. as they have to be under these facts, if justice is to be served. Were they guilty of something? Yes. They were guilty of not fastening his seatbelt. Is that even a crime? I think it is a misdemeanor. But there's not going to be a conviction of murdering Freddie Gray. And if those protesters want something to do, let them protest the 93 people who've been murdered in Baltimore in the last 3 months. Talk about New York, the cops here. Talk about this Trump poll in New Hampshire surging. So who's laughing now? And a very special guest coming up.
D.C.'s bailing out the bankers as a farmer's auction ground. Yeah, while they're living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town, here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down. Here in the real world, they're
John Rich. Good buddy of mine, was with them last night on Hannity. He came over to my house. Hopefully he can give us a call before he jumps on a plane in Nashville. Big and Rich, terrific song. Played a song for us. I'm going to play for you later. Barry's on the line. Barry in Edgewood, what's on your mind there? Thanks for going 866 Araldo, Barry.
Araldo, that's Edgewater, not Edgewood.
Oh, you're in Edgewater. Okay, neighbor, what's up?
All right. We spoke before the tragedy in South Carolina about Trump. And I left you with a question which you never answered, which is, would you want to see him running this country? So we never got to that. When you said, call me back. So I did. And I'm looking at what the news and the Post did to Trump. And they made him a, you know, what they did to him on the front page was awful. I think that disrespected him, and I think it disrespected the process. But by the same token, Donald Trump has disrespected the run for presidency. He gets up there, and he's demanding, he's stomping, he's doing his Donald thing. But don't disrespect that. This is the presidency of the United States.
What exactly do you find disrespectful? The fact that he speaks so frankly, sometimes harshly, about his rivals?
No, but we all know what can be done and what can't be done. And what he does is, yes, he speaks harshly about it.
Well, let me ask you that. I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Go ahead,
Barry? Okay. Here's my question. You live in Edgewater. So you ever use Route 1 and 9? Or you ever use, you know, say, 4 or 17?
Not
you ever drive
on Route 4 all over
all right.
Jersey.
Now, how many times have you had to replace your shocks or your tires because of potholes in one thing or the other thing? Don't
Zero,
you believe,
and
that's Chris Christie, Mr. Can-Do. Okay, that's Mr. Can-Do is the governor there, and he can't do because it's the worst roads in the city.
Also, I mean, he's terrible. I voted
Don't you
for
think Trump would rebuild
would
those roads better than anybody? I do. Anyway, Barry, either hold on or call back. I got my important guest now. It was delightful to have him in our home. Eric and I have him in our home with his pal T.J., he's got a new product line coming out, the Redneck Riviera line. He can tell us about that. The star country music singer, songwriter, just wrote a new number with Taylor Swift. John Rich joins us. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. I'm at the LaGuardia Airport.
The world's worst.
Trying to figure out how to operate an iPad menu, which is one of the most maddening things I've ever seen in my life.
But, I mean, that's such a grim place. That's another story, LaGuardia. So you were on Hannity with me last night, and the reason I really wanted to have you on, John, aside from the fact that I like you, I love your stuff, I'm good friends with my my former neighbor, John Bon Jovi and Dorothea. But, John, the reason that you said something on Hannity's show yesterday. Hannity asked you, and you're a fixture in Nashville, big in country music scene, tends to be a conservative scene. He asked you about the Confederate battle flag, and you said to him, and you could set it up. I tell you what, why don't you set it up, because I don't want to give it short shrift. But tell the folks how you led up to what the punchline, which I will repeat.
I mean, I think Sean was looking for a big debate about it, and I just looked at Sean and said, Sean, there's only one flag that I care about. It's the American flag, and he answered the American flag. I said exactly, and that was kind of the end of the conversation. I think it should be the end of the conversation nationally.
There's only one flag that we
should all care about, and that's the flag. We're not separated by flags. I mean, give me a break. That, to me, it's just it's drummed up. And like I said, if people use the rebel flag or any flag for that matter to inflict pain on other people, then they're evil. I mean, they're bad people if that's what they're using it for. And even if they're not intending to hurt people with it, if they are hurting them, then you're hurting them. It's kind of like I was taught, it doesn't matter if you meant to offend that person. If they're offended, they're offended. And so if you're concerned about them being offended, do something about it. And that's the way I was raised. And like I said, at the end of the day, there's only one flag flying in my yard, and that's the Stars and Stripes.
John Rich is my guest. The Big and Rich, you know the group, but also he was in Lone Star. Remember that group? And how's working with Taylor Swift?
Oh, man, she's awesome. She's kind of like my little sister kind of thing, you know? I mean, she's over the years when she was getting started, she'd call me on the phone and ask me advice about stuff. And one day actually called up and said, hey, I'm about one block from your house and I've got a song idea. You want to write a song? I went, yeah. So she popped into my house and 90 minutes later we had written a song called That's the Way I Loved You that was on her Fearless album. And, yeah, she's a great girl, and I appreciate everything that she's really doing for the music business. She's taking on the biggest companies out there.
And she was great when she took on Apple, made them blink. Oh, I mean, love that. And Spotify.
Take Apple and swing them around over their head. Nobody.
She's my favorite entertainer. I mean, female for sure. So let me ask you this. I mean, I just want to remind people that you won Celebrity Apprentice. I lost. You won. And you raised for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital $1.3 million. So, I mean, you got a great heart. But you did something last night in my apartment. You know, we still have boxes. We just moved in. So John came over. He saw a little rinky-dink guitar that we have by the piano there. Sol plays it, and Erica plays it from time. John picked it up, and it was one of the most special moments. He did a Johnny Cash number for us, and we recorded it. And here is John Rich accompanied by everybody, the drunks at the table last night. Here it is.
Well, love is a burning thing, and it makes fire.
John, I don't know if that'll make it to the top of the charts, but it sure was a lot of fun. We were honored to sing alongside you. I tell you that, brother.
Well, that's what friends do, man. And where I come from in Nashville, that's what we do when we're all hanging out. We get out a guitar and somebody starts singing, and that's how the party goes. I really appreciate you having me over, man. It was good to finally spend some time talking with you.
What about the Redneck Riviera stuff? I got 30 seconds. Tell us about this new line you're putting out.
Yeah, so Redneck Riviera is a phrase that's been around about 50 years. It's kind of what we all call in the South the Gulf Coast, from Myrtle Beach down to South Padre. And I've launched an entire lifestyle brand around it, redneckriviera.com. Just go check that out. You'll see it. It's boots, apparel, restaurants and bars.
I love your boots, man. They look cool.
Yeah, man, I need to send you a pair. So it's
well, I'll buy them. I'll buy them. I wasn't looking for a freebie. Redneck Riviera from John Rich. John, thanks a lot. It was great being with
thanks
you last night.
You're the man. Thanks.
All right, you're the man. Have a safe flight. Mick Fleetwood's birthday, June 24th, Wednesday. Early to talk about politics, but it is so stunning to me, this poll. And I predicted it. I said, and the New York Times quoted me, if you'll recall, when Trump announced, I said, the problem for the GOP is that was on a Monday, it was a week ago Monday, the day Jeb Bush announced that he was formally running for president. And I said, the problem for the Republicans is Jeb Bush is announcing today, who would you rather watch, him or Trump? Who would you rather watch at this point, him or Trump? Now, Trump says some things, as you know, that I find very discordant, unhelpful. His statements about the Mexican immigrants, very harsh and inaccurate. And I think therein lies the biggest danger to his candidacy, his habit of saying incendiary things. More often than not, he's right and he's spot on. But the problem for the Republicans, aside from the fact that he is so entertaining to watch, and many of his ideas really have traction, and we can get into them. I call it Barry. I want to get Barry, just be patient and come back to you. In terms of infrastructure and so forth, I think that he would do a far better job in mustering the workers and the budgets it needs to do things like rebuild bridges and so forth. And this poll is stunning. Trump is right behind Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush has 14%. These are likely GOP presidential primary voters in New Hampshire. Jeb Bush leads with 14. Trump is right behind him at 11. And the ones you've been hearing so much about, Scott Walker, Marco Rubio, and so forth, 8%, 7%, they're way behind. And the other ones are barely registering. Chris Christie's getting shut out. But the problem for Republicans and the GOP, if you think Trump would be a disaster as a candidate, is that the primary process appeals to people who are highly motivated, who votes in the primaries. Do you know Layton vote in primaries?
Sure.
Do your neighbors?
No, probably not.
I mean, the turnout is... I mean, de Blasio won. Didn't he win with 20% of the total city electorate?
It was one of the lowest ever, yeah.
And the primary was, the primary was in New York City. The primary is the election. But here in the presidential context, primary voters tend to be much more conservative, not much more, but significantly more conservative than people in the general election. And conservatives, hard conservatives, like what Trump is saying. So I believe that this man is and will be for the foreseeable future, unless and until something disastrous happens to his life or his campaign, and we certainly don't wish it on him. But unless something dramatic and profound happens, he is going to be a threat in these early primary states, particularly the first election in New Hampshire. He's been up in New Hampshire a lot. It's all about retail politics in New Hampshire. It's all about meeting him, hearing him, greeting him. All right, so Barry, now you've heard my take on it. Where am I wrong? Barry, you there?
Vaguely familiar to you in terms of what happened in 2012, where the Republicans had a candidate of the week, the Herman Cains, the Rick Perrys, what have you. I predict for you that Trump will last, his 15 minutes, and then we'll move on to somebody else. And I don't think that he will be the candidate. I think we'll come down to Bush and Clinton, which I'm very sorry to say is not where I want the country to go, because I think we need somebody younger to take us through a generational transition. But Trump is the clown of the week, Geraldo. I'm very surprised that you don't see that.
I'm very surprised that here is a poll of 500 likely GOP presidential primary voters that you dismiss out of hand, Barry, because you're so smart. You're so smart. You're so wise. You know who's going to be the candidate. And
don't you see the pattern, though? Is this not what happened in 2012?
Pattern, though it may be, it is the reality now. I appreciate the call. Thank you. And Gary in Forest Hills, what are you thinking about, buddy?
Here's what I like about Trump, okay? The other day, the day before yesterday, some dummy reporter said to him, Mr. Trump, who do you think, which woman should be on a $10 bill? He looked at her, gave her a look, and said, my mother. It's about time somebody started answering stupid questions from stupid reporters, because any other candidate would have stood there and embloviated about how long it's been since we've had a woman on something important like this and gone on and on pandering to everybody. Stupid question, answer it with a stupid answer. Everybody left, shut her up, move on to something important.
Well, I was trying to think when you posed that hypothetical who I would put on the $10 bill. I don't think I would take Alexander Hamilton off the $10 bill.
It doesn't matter. After 2 weeks, you going to look on the $10 bill and see whose face is staring back at you?
Well, as long as I've got enough of them in my pocket
to
buy what I'm looking to spend.
A lot of green in the pocket washes away all sorts of problems.
All right. I'll take a couple more calls on Trump at 866 or older, but I think that it is fascinating. But I go back to when you look at South Carolina and Governor Nikki Haley, I think she'd be a perfect candidate, a perfect candidate for vice president. I don't know who the presidential lead should be, and I'm not endorsing anybody, and I won't until, you know, the day before, maybe, like I did last time. But I find him, Trump, fascinating, and I'd like the idea of competence, and I haven't seen much competence in the public sphere. When you think about why is it that everything, you know, the infrastructure is left in such a woeful condition? You ever drive around Europe and you see the highways there and the bridges there? And, I hate to make contrasts and say theirs is better than ours. But even in countries that have fairly troubled finances, Italy, say, you know, you just don't go down roads that are all potholed up. Driving around Manhattan is, you should be able to, you know how people sue the city for slip and falls, which I think they should not be allowed to, but they do. I think every driver around, every pothole damaged vehicle around, it's just who's responsible for that? Are they trying surreptitiously to cut down on traffic by keeping everything, the conditions of everything so horrible? I just think that in terms of infrastructure, if Trump's not president, maybe you should make him something else. Welcome back. At 50 minutes after 10 o'clock, we're getting reports of a jumper in the Bronx. A lot of looky-loos tying up traffic and so forth. We'll give you a report from the scene as soon as we get it. Frankie in Brooklyn, what's up, man?
Good morning, Rivaldo. Always, it's a pleasure. I'd like to state that past the veneer, past the veneer of his ego, and it just brings to mind about what Babe Ruth once said, is if you could do it, it's not boasting. So I don't see Donald Trump as somebody who's boasting. I see him as a patriot. He's neither Republican nor Democrat. His thoughts are clear, and he's the voice of America, and I would take one for him. If you ain't listening, Donald, just know this. I'm out here for you.
All right. Frankie in Brooklyn would take one for the Donald. Well, that's pretty extreme. Here's Russ in Oldbridge. What are you thinking about, Russ?
Hey, I'm thinking about Donald Trump. I'd like him to be my president, and I will vote for him for one reason. Oil, crude oil, and what he said about ISIS. If you starve them, I think his words were, I'll take their oil away. He didn't mean sending ground troops in there. He meant get the price of oil down to where it used to be, $30 a barrel. Remember those decades? Or lower, and you've just starved them of their entire funding. They cannot operate because they have nothing else to sell.
I thought that what he meant was he's going to bomb the hell out of the oil refineries. That's the way I read that.
Well, he could have said that, but as quickly as you bomb them, some idiot will rebuild them again. That's a game of cat and mouse.
Okay, I got my jumper call. I gotta let you go. Six, hello?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. How you doing?
All right, Jay, where are you and what are you seeing?
I'm in the Bronx. I'm near 152nd Street and Prospect Avenue, and for the last half hour, there's a gentleman near Union Avenue and East 156th Street. And he was on the ledge of, it looks like 20 stories high. And the cops were trying to talk him out of it, and he just jumped.
He just jumped?
He jumped, yeah. He looked, he had a wooden stick in his hand, so the cops, I guess, couldn't really get too close to him. It was going on for, I would say, at least 40 minutes, half hour. And he just jumped like a minute ago.
And so what was that like for you to watch it?
It was crazy. I mean, I honestly didn't think he was going to jump. And I guess, you know, for whatever reason, he decided to take his life. It was a big crowd here. There was at least, I would say, maybe 25 emergency service police officers on the roof trying to talk to him. But like I said, he had some sort of wooden stick, it looked like, so they couldn't really get too close to him to grab him.
What did he land on?
Well, I'm still two blocks away because the police have the area taped off. But I would say probably, you know how they have the courtyards in the project?
Yeah.
So I think that's where he probably landed because it looks like some sort of project.
Well, I appreciate the report. It sounds pretty awful. But thank you very much.
You know, someone's just tweeting us a picture of this building. It looks like an apartment building that he jumped off of, and I see a construction crane in the background, and maybe the ladder that he used to get himself from one portion of the building to the other. And you can see him, well, now we know that he jumped, but you can see him holding on to this railing at the top of the building and kind of leaning forward like he's about to make that fatal, deadly leap.
You know, I always wonder about people that jump off the bridges or buildings. What, I mean, do they are they conscious when they are falling? I mean, are they already...
Do you go into shock?
Dead? You know, I don't know. I mean, what's... Anyway. Rick in New Jersey. Thanks for going to 866 Geraldo. Rick, what's up?
Hi, Geraldo. Thanks for taking my call. I have to say I love you. Don't always agree with you, but I do appreciate what you
say. I'm in, brother. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, so my comment is regarding Donald Trump. And I have to say, as alluded to by an earlier caller, all these other candidates, whether it's Hillary or Bush or whoever, they go through focus groups, polls, analysts, what have you, in order to answer questions or to make statements. Donald Trump talks from the heart. And I tell you, I'd rather vote for someone who I may not agree with 100%, but I know what he stands for. He's not telling me or everybody else.
Well, let me ask you this, Rick. Let me ask you about his temper. You've seen him respond when people attack him. He tends to come back, you know, with 10 times the energy of the person who's attacked him. Is that appropriate for the, you know, the leader of the free world?
I tell you, I kind of agree with that observation. I think he needs to dial it back a little bit and refine himself a little. I really do. If he does, I think he really has a good chance. Just one last point, Geraldo. I tell you, I hang with a bunch of businessmen for happy hour every once in a while. We all talk about politics, and we're all over the map regarding politics. And believe me, a lot of these discussions get heated. When someone asked recently who would vote for Trump here, everyone raised their hand.
Really?
Tired of politics as usual. They want someone fresh who loves this country. That's Donald Trump.
All right. I appreciate the call, Rick. Excellent. Thank you. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
In Connecticut. So tell me what's on your mind, honey.
Geraldo, well, I wanted to tell you why I want to vote for Donald Trump. I mean, obviously, this country is in deep trouble, deep, deep trouble in every regard, I think. $18 trillion in debt, I mean, and all of the other things.
Elizabeth, I tell you what, if you could hold on, I'll get the rest of your thought. You seem like an intelligent lady, and I'd love to hear what you really have to say.
Geraldo, I think I met you in Venice in 1973.
Ooh, how was I? No, I'll see you later, Elizabeth.
Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Three callers have asked Noam when I was going to try to shoot the apple off your head.
Did you, you know, you had that moment at Fox News, what was that, a week ago, where you were in the middle of all those
bayonets
with the Marines, and they cut
the
you
Army,
by accident?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there was another accident on Fox and Friends again?
No way.
Yeah, there was a guy who was throwing hatchets at a target, I don't know, 5 to 10 feet away.
Oh, I heard about that.
And when they were going to tease the segment and going into commercial break, someone threw one of the hatchets towards this piece of wood to tease the segment. And instead of hitting in the piece of wood, it hit a drummer who was playing the drums nearby.
No way.
In the arm. Yes, you're not the only one to be hurt on the
set. So somebody got
axed.
And Friends.
Yeah, and like, you know, got a real cut. You know, I mean, has an injury to his arm today. They had some guy, you know, doing like a drum roll.
I think you have to rethink some of these stunts. All right, now, coming up, Ed Mullins, the Sergeant Ed Mullins, the head of the Sergeant's Benevolent Association, is coming on live to react to Mayor Bill de Blasio looking around and smelling the roses or maybe slipping in the blood on the streets. I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, you do have, and the Daily News is all over this. You have murder up 11.6%. We've had 154 murders so far this year. Sounds like a lot. It's 11.6% more than the same period in 2014. We've had 605 people shot in the city since the beginning of the year. That's up 6.9%. We've had 518 shooting incidents, slightly up 6.1%. Anyway, the problem with these trends is, the problem with these statistics, let me state this very accurately, the problem with these statistics is the fear that it's a trend. It's not the jump of 6.9 or 11.6 so much as it is the fear that it's 11% up this year, 11% next year, and before you know it, it's exponential, and you're back to the grim days when, you know, we had 2,000 murders every year. Now, one of the things that have happened as crime has dropped and as the city has struggled with its financial, you know, its fiscal sanity, we've lowered the number of cops from 40,000. We had former Commissioner Carrick on yesterday, from 40,000 down to 35,000, below that now. And then even the city council, the hard left-wing city council, was all over the mayor saying we need more cops. Certainly, if Commissioner Bill Bratton wants to do community policing, he wants to have cops on the corner, you know, Officer Krumpke that everybody knows, that Officer Krumpke knows everybody there, you know, that return to that kind of, you know, very personal policing, you need more cops to do it. Less people pushing paper in the offices, more cops on the streets. So now, you know, the mayor has not only decided, you know, he's not only capitulated or whatever is, you know, he's agreed to the staffing, the 1,000 cops that the city council wanted, and he's upped it. He's got, I think he's getting 1,300 total. So why did he do it? Is that enough? Will we now have enough cops to stop this trend in its tracks before it gets too late? I'd love to hear from you. Now, did the mayor do the right thing? Did he do the right thing because he wants to do the right thing for the city? Did he do the right thing just because, you know, business leaders and others were saying, hey, we've got a lot invested here, people in the neighborhoods calling him. Why did the mayor do it? Did he do the right thing? Is it the right thing? We'll have Sergeant Mullins, I said, coming up, and your calls at 866-HERALDO. But before we went to the news break, at the top of the hour, I had an intriguing caller from Connecticut suggesting that we met in Venice sometime back in the 70s.
City of Love.
In the City of Love, of course. And she called back, or held on. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi.
So what happened in Venice?
Oh, you don't remember, Geraldo? you don't?
I may, but you keep reminding me.
It was the summer of 73, and I met you in Venice.
The Greedy Palace? Was it the Greedy Palace?
You were there that summer, right?
I was, yes, I was there.
Okay, well, then it wasn't a look-alike impersonating you. I was a young kid, and obviously, when I met you, I was, you know, starstruck. And, well, I probably shouldn't go into the rest of the details on the radio, Geraldo. But think about it. I hope you remember.
Okay, okay.
Do you remember now or no? Maybe you should go into more of the details.
I remember.
Maybe you'll remember that way. Where did you guys go?
I think that we have enough of the details.
I don't think we do, actually.
Venice, it was so beautiful.
You two can speak later. It is gorgeous. Venice is gorgeous. I remember it was one of my first luxury trips. I remember the Greedy Palace. I'd never been on sheets like that before.
Oh, well, I didn't say it anyplace.
Okay. All right, can we go back to Trump now?
Did you feel those sheets
as well? To me,
Elizabeth, let's go back to Donald Trump.
It's an exciting memory, but, I hope maybe you should try to jog a memory. Okay,
did he call you afterwards or no? Is that just a sort of one-night thing and never called you back?
Pardon me?
Did he call you afterwards?
77 WABC. What about Donald Trump, Elizabeth?
No. Okay, yes, we'll move on. I was going to say that... you know, I'm an independent, and if Trump makes it, I am definitely going to vote for him for the following reasons. I think this country is in so much trouble in every regard. You know, financially, domestic policies, what's going on in this poor country, our international relations, obviously, ISIS, you name it. There's not one thing that's not in big trouble. And I think we need someone who's not a career politician. We need, first of all, as far as finances, as far as business, like you're talking about infrastructure and things of that nature. I mean, this guy obviously is a brilliant businessman. You can love him, you can hate him, you can criticize him, but you can't deny that. That's what we need. I mean, this country is really in dangerous shape. As far as dealing with our enemies, I think that our enemies would fear him and respect him, which is something we don't have now. And I wonder how you,
Elizabeth, it's been delightful, and the memories are as fresh as if it were yesterday. But thank
you. Are they coming back?
Thank you. I am going back.
They are. Actually.
I'm going back. Yeah, I'm going back. My beautiful wife and I are going back to Venice in August. But thank you for your call. I appreciate it. You know, I'm all flustered here. She mentioned ISIS, and I just have to note this. Did you, when they release these videos of what they do to their detainees, their prisoners, do you watch them?
I've seen a few of them, yeah.
I can't watch them. I never even liked horror movies because I don't like that kind of anxiety. I don't like what people sometimes do to other people. But never in my experience has a group reveled in its own sadism the way ISIS does. You know, it's one thing to do a suicide bombing. And suicide bombing, when you think about it, the guy's kind of courageous. I mean, I know people get all distorted when people suggest that. They're not like kamikaze pilots in World War II. People would dismiss their courage because, oh, that's just the way they think. It's just their culture. And then they would take their aircraft and smash them into our aircraft carriers. And it was a weapon that strategically had great impact and prolonged the war, the kamikaze. And the suicide bomber, like the IED, the roadside bomb, is a weapon that's being used against us with great effect. You cannot deny that the suicide bombing works. What ISIS is doing is just pure terror, sadistic terror. And they released this video. Now, if you wanted any more reason why we need to crush ISIS, it is the fact that they revel in their own sadism, their cruelty. Now you have them putting prisoners in vehicles and blowing up the vehicles. You have them putting people in cages and then lowering the cages into water and drowning them. And you have them, blowing up civilians, putting suicide belts around civilians who they suspect are informing. Because, you know, we're wiping out their leadership with our drone strikes, but the drones need intelligence. So ISIS now, in a panic, is saying they can't trust anybody. So they're anyone they suspect of being a snitch, an informant to the West. And a lot of the civilians living in ISIS-controlled territory don't support ISIS, but they are civilians. And maybe some of them are dropping the dime on some of these leaders. Oh, you know, Mustafa so-and-so is inside the building number 3 over there, and the drone strike comes 45 minutes later. But to see them do this, to see them, these monsters, the sadistic, cruel, horrible people doing this to civilians, really unarmed, harmless civilians. I mean, I just want them, punished. I want them, regardless of any strategic value, I want these people, these are perpetrators of crimes against humanity. Humanity must strike them. We must take the lead in striking them.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
24 minutes after 11 o'clock. Now, Mayor de Blasio, or at least a top of City Hall official cited by the New York Daily News, speaking for the de Blasio administration, say the mayor did not blink. He did not waver from his position that the city does not need more cops to keep the streets safe. Rather, this source tells the Daily News, the mayor was swayed by Commissioner Bratton's new vision for the department. We really wanted to change how cops deal with the community, according to the administration official. Okay, now, did the mayor blink? Or is he now just embarking on this grand new scheme for how cops deal with people, folks on the streets? Let's ask Sergeant Ed Mullins, the ever opinionated leader of the Sergeants Benevolent Association, who said if de Blasio refuses to add more cops and crime continues to go up, it's going to land on his hands, said Ed, in a way that was very crystal clear to me. But Sergeant Mullins joins us right now. So, Sarge, which was it? Is it all about Bill Bratton's new vision for your department, or is it because crime's inching up? Or do you care?
I tend to think it's a combination of two. And to be quite honest with you, Geraldo, I have personally spoken with Commissioner Bratton since all of this has happened, and he has laid out a vision of what he'd like to do to create a more harmonious police department with the public, in addition to addressing conditions within each of the precincts where we take ownership. The police officers in those precincts take ownership in the problems that are within each precinct.
Just give me that in... I understand the general concept, but just give me how it affects me. I'm living on 149th Street and 3rd Avenue in the Bronx. How does it affect my life?
Additional officers would be assigned to your precinct, and it won't have an impact to patrol answering 911 calls. The additional officers will be able to focus more on the conditions within the precinct, whether it be the homeless condition, narcotics condition, and provide the intelligence information going back and forth between the officers on patrol and rotating them with the officers that are trying to work almost like in module type of groups, where they can, you know, create a more hand-in-hand working relationship.
All right, here's my problem. My problem is you got a panhandler. He's bugging everybody. Every time I get in my car, he tries to wash my windows or sell me something that I don't want. It's really bugging me, and it's making my kids feel freaked out.
That is the problem. And here's where I see the problem is the policy tying into broken windows, and what you just described would tie into broken windows. Are we enforcing broken windows, or are we not enforcing broken windows? If we're not going to, you know, continue to do what we've done over the years, then you can put thousands of cops on a street. If we're not taking action for those little crimes, then we're not going to have that type of impact. The spike that we see in the shootings and the crimes going across the board, I wholeheartedly believe is a result of the perps in the street knowing that the cops have a different policy that they're working under. And that they are less likely to be stopped by a police officer, so therefore I will carry my firearm. And I really believe that you're seeing that as the common denominator into the violence and the street robberies and the shootings and things along those lines. So it's not just add cops to the precinct, change the way we do business. It's, are we going to continue to be a proactive police department or a reactive police department?
Let me ask you this. Sergeant Ed Mullins is my guest. We're talking about the fact that Mayor de Blasio has conceded and will now add almost 1,300 new cops to the NYPD this coming after this big showdown or face-to-face sit-down between Commissioner Bratton and the mayor, regardless of how what caused it, it is happening. How do your members, Ed, Sergeant Mullins, how do your members feel about overtime? Now, they were working a lot of overtime. Is overtime good? I mean, don't you want some overtime?
You have the people who want the overtime, and you have the people who want to go home. So it's split, and that's the ironic part about it. You know, everyone wants money, but in the same breath, you're going to work tomorrow on overtime, and I have a family barbecue I want to be at. So it's very conflicted, and it's almost like when you break down a police department, there are people who make a lot of arrests, and there are people who make some arrests. Nothing across the board is exactly even, and I guess that's just the makeup of people in general. You know, you can have a cashier in a checkout place does more customers than someone else, but in the end, it really is split. Everyone wants the overtime. Everyone wants the money until they can't get a day off, or if they have something important, you know, regarding their family that they want to attend, and now overtime's a problem.
So is there a cap now? I mean, he says he's going to pay for these new cops by capping overtime. Is that the way you read this?
Well, the word cap becomes a technical issue for us because they, by law, cannot cap your overtime. If I work more than my scheduled tours. I am entitled by federal law to be paid. I have sued the city three times on this basis and have won all three times. But what they are making reference to, and I made sure that this was pretty clear from what I'm told, it's you own a business, you're managing the expenses of your business by how you distribute your employees and shifts and things along those lines. Management always had that right to do that. We understand that. But within that, we have contracts and we have federal laws that protect the workers, and they know that they have to.
So if you work, you're going to get paid.
If you work, you're getting paid.
All right. So now I only have a couple of seconds left. I just want to know. So if a cop is on this tour now, they want every cop to tour for 2.5 hours. Are they supposed to get out of the car to talk to people?
Part of the new strategy that the commissioner is putting together. It's not, you know, you and I are working patrol in a car. That doesn't alleviate those calls from coming in because the excess of personnel will pick up those additional calls. It sounds interesting. The key is to see if it practically works.
All right, I'll call you back when I see if crime drops.
Yeah. Good luck.
Sergeant Ed Mullins. Maroon 5, the summer's going to hurt like a mother. I still am fearful of where we go, although I am tremendously heartened by the calm in Charleston. I still worry about this being a red-hot summer and the whole race thing flaring up. I hope it does not come to pass. I hope the reaction, the profoundly compassionate reaction out of Charleston, South Carolina, is the way that it goes, much more than the violence in Baltimore. And I really do believe that Baltimore's got a major disappointment coming. Those cops were hugely overcharged. They will never be convicted of the murder rap and some of these other more serious felony allegations. And when you look back at it, the prosecutor had to know, certainly should have known, that there was no evidence of depraved heart murder in Baltimore. There's been some developments regarding the Confederate flag that I would like to share with you. I think that it's led, first of all, Noam, to a fascinating discussion. And I do believe that unlike the Newtown, Connecticut school massacre, where the slaughter of 26 babies and teachers did not lead to gun control, remember, the NRA seized on that, actually, and said if there were people with guns in the school, they could have saved the children. If there were people with guns in the church in Charleston, they could have saved those people. You know, so the argument, and people start to say, nod their head, yes, not remembering that civilians very rarely use their weapon to stop a bad guy. It happens so infrequently. It's in the movies. It doesn't happen in real life. Once in a while, once in a great while, much more often than not, a gun in the house leads to the 4-year-old killing the 2-year-old. But there are some developments regarding the Charleston, South Carolina massacre that I want to share. They released the dash cam video of the bust, and you see the guy. You know, again, congratulations to the Shelby, North Carolina cops and that lady that followed the Dylan Roof around and finally reported to her boss, who called 911. That led to his being busted. But the developments, as the debate rages in South Carolina, in nearby Alabama, the governor there, a fellow by the name of Bentley, has just ordered all the Confederate flags to be taken down on the state capitol grounds. That's in Alabama. I mean, unlike South Carolina, you don't need the legislature to pass by supermajority to drop the flag. Which is like a weird, weird law. But in Alabama, they've just taken down the Confederate flags. And when you think about it, how long, take a guess now, how long has the Confederate flag flown in the state capital of Alabama? Now, the Civil War ended in 1865. Alabama in the Deep South, obviously deeply engaged in the Confederacy and slavery and plantations and all the rest of it. How long have they flown the Confederate battle flag on the grounds of the state capitol?
See, I think the obvious answer would be to say then 1866 they started flying it, but I'll bet you it's only in the last 50 years.
Only last 20 years.
Yeah.
Last 20 years, and totally to shaft, to give the, it's like giving the, you know, this,
yeah.
The, when Italian people put the hand on yep. the chin, the, yes, it's the Stugats. It's the, you know, it's defiance over, it's reaction to civil rights legislation. Reaction to voting rights legislation, reaction to shifting power structure as black people move back from the north to the south to reclaim roots. You know, the disappointment in the great industrial cities now in Cleveland and Detroit and, you know, Buffalo, all these cities that were attracted black folks to come work in factories that no longer exist, many moving back to the south. So it is reaction to the change. That's where the defiance comes from. That's where the Confederate battle flag flying from the 60s and the 70s and the 1980s, that's where it comes from. And now maybe this act will lead to a fundamental change. Did you ever watch the Dukes of Hazzard? You ever watch that
sure.
TV show?
Mm-hmm.
And you know they had the car. I forget what they called the car. What they call it? Robert E. Lee. Probably Robert E. Lee after the general. General Lee.
That's what it was.
Yeah. But there was there's a Confederate flag on the General Lee's
right, I remember
Dodge.
That. Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, now they're bringing back Dukes of Hazzard. Are they going to have the Confederate flag?
I'm sure they won't.
On the
Hollywood.
Dodge.
They won't do that.
But Cooter from the old TV series, Dukes of Hazzard, he's defending it. He said his name is Ben Jones. He actually ran for Congress after the original series. He was so popular. He's saying that it's... political correctness ran amok.
Well, you remember all the 70s bands? They all, when they would tour with the Confederate flag. Leonard Skinner, Molly Hatchet. I'm sure there's a lot of other acts I'm leaving out. But their whole thing was, we're good old boys from the South, and they have a big Confederate flag on stage with them or on the front of their album cover.
So I hear what you're saying. Now, would you appreciate Leonard Skinner still having the Confederate flag?
You know, I remember seeing those album covers and not really thinking anything more about the flag than it was just
either.
A flag.
I have
know?
To admit, I never did either, except when you see the mass murderer waving it around as he burns the American flag. I heard Rush Limbaugh say that if they take down the Confederate battle flag, no flag is safe, not even the national ensign of the American Republic. That's next. The American flag is next. I mean, where does he get that from? Where does he get that from?
He's got to fill airtime. He's got to talk about something.
But, I mean, come on. Give me a break.
It's old news. That's the problem.
We took down the Confederate battle flag. Now we're going to have to take down all the American flags. It's just so, so stupid.
77 WABC.
9 minutes to high noon. Ron Kuby is, aside from being a flamboyant blowhard, no, I'm kidding.
That's cold.
He's a great lawyer. He really is. A terrific lawyer. But I don't know whether he agrees with my assessment of Baltimore, which I want to restate for you.
Yes, please do, because unfortunately I was one of the few people in America who was not listening
to you.
Oh,
damn you. Damn you. Damn your bloody eyes. A black Baltimore cop, Caesar Goodson Jr., is charged with depraved heart murder in that city. He was the driver of the prison van.
Who gave
the rough ride to Freddie Gray.
Basically severed this guy's spine.
All right. Now, it turns out, now they have released, as you may or may not have heard, released the autopsy, or it leaked last night, and they talk about how he must have been standing. He has one fatal injury in his entire body, and it was to his head as he obviously fell from a standing position, says the coroner. Now, when they put him in the prison van, he was on his belly and shackled behind his hands, behind his back, and his feet, his ankles shackled. They put him in on his belly. He obviously stood up.
Oh, my God! He stood up.
during the intentional rough ride, obviously he was asking for it. He probably did it to himself in order to embarrass the Baltimore police. Was that your analysis?
There is the defense right there. And, how do you prove, counselor,
sir,
how do you prove that the driver of the van had a depraved heart murder? The classic example is the passenger in the speeding train who gets killed by someone who shoots the train randomly. Did that officer, that black cop, really have a depraved heart?
Well, I think ultimately that becomes a jury question. I would say, in all honesty, I think that depraved heart murder is always very, very difficult to prove.
Amen.
In the classic senses, prosecutors, as a rule, tend to charge whatever the evidence can support, recognizing in reality that this is more of a reckless manslaughter charge.
So, does Ron Kuby, famed civil rights attorney, agree with me that these charges had very little chance of success, that they were basically a political rather than a legal
act? Well, I would
act.
Only agree with that if you were to agree that every single prosecutor in America who seeks the highest possible charge is just engaged in political pandering to his or her constituents, because they all do this. Now, I know you want to single out the black woman, because, hey, gosh, they can do that too?
I am protecting the black man.
Where is this? What's
happening? I was protecting the black man driving the damn prison van.
You were protecting.
Should he now be an accused murderer?
You were.
I mean, what, did he violate Freddie Gray's civil rights?
The blue guy. And, you know, the truth is,
you're conveniently colorblind when it suits you.
The jury will ultimately make that decision. And, again, if I were a betting man, I would go with reckless manslaughter. But look, I would have bet that Daniel Pantaleo would have been charged with reckless manslaughter, or at least littering for leaving Eric Garner's body on the ground. But, hey.
Chokehold cop.
Yeah, you know, I think that involuntary manslaughter
might have been appropriate in the Staten Island case. It is not even that appropriate in the Baltimore. I think what you have here is a failure to put a seatbelt on.
and how is he going to put his seatbelt on when he was
no,
chained
no, the
and
cop,
shackled?
The cop should have put his seatbelt on.
Right.
That's the rule.
And the cop also should not have given him a rough ride.
They all give them rough rides.
You've never had
a rough ride?
Yeah, I have.
Me too.
I have. And
me too.
And
it didn't kill me.
But I wasn't standing up acting out either.
I wasn't being hysterical and throwing my body around.
You manage to blame the victim. How is he hysterical throwing his body around?
The other inmate in the prison van saying that he was doing
that. Right, and what kind of deal is he going to get? What kind of deal is he going to get?
All I know is that this prosecutor...
Yeah, a convict said it, so it's true.
So what happens to Baltimore now? When the cop is acquitted, as the cop certainly will be.
He won't certainly be, Geraldo.
He will certainly
be
acquitted.
It is likely that he'll get acquitted. One of the things I found, remember the Diallo case?
Sure.
Which created huge controversy here. Innocent African man shot to death multiple times. They reloaded and everything. There were huge demonstrations in New York. There was, however, a trial. And everybody got to see the trial and the evidence. It was televised, even though that was usually not consistent with court rules. And afterward, there was a verdict return. Of course, you know, all the killers were acquitted because why wouldn't they be? But at least people got to see the trial. And people understood, even I understood, although I disagree with the verdict, I understood how a jury could have made that decision. And that's one of the really good things about trials. People get to see the evidence for themselves. They get to see what happens. The
Just like O.J. Simpson.
Forward. Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay, Geraldo. So what's your alternative to
my alternative
to
is charge for the crime. You have a reasonable possibility of getting a conviction.
Okay.
It's supposed to be you believe there's probable cause.
You did defend a white guy.
You're supposed to
Mikey
have probable
Suits.
Cause.
Your buddy Mikey Suits. Well, they definitely have probable cause, Geraldo. Whether they can get a
probable cause for
is,
depraved
is
murder?
Sure.
That's depraved.
They totally have probable cause.
Gooby and Curtis are next, right here.